Hello, hello, and welcome to Arthouse Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make arthouse, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today on the show, we're discussing the latest film from director Wes Anderson, Asteroid City. Filmmaker and my friend, Christopher Pistole, returns to share his reactions to the film. Stick around.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Arthouse Garage. It's always exciting when a new Wes Anderson film comes out. His films are always rich for discussion. Just before we get to that, there's an exciting film event coming up in Arkansas that I want to spread the word about. The 48-Hour Film Project is an annual competition that happens all over the world in which you, along with a small team, make a movie in 48 hours. If that sounds a little wild, I think that's kind of the point. I've had the great pleasure of seeing many films that came out of the 48-Hour Film Project, though I've never done it myself. But the Little Rock Film Project is coming up August 25th through 27th. I was thrilled to speak recently with Celeste Shelton. She's the city producer for the Little Rock 48-Hour Film Project, and she stopped by the virtual recording booth the other day to tell us all about it. Here's my conversation with Celeste. I'm here with Celeste Shelton, city producer of the Little Rock 48-Hour Film Project. Celeste, welcome to the podcast, and how are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Andrew, for having me. Thanks for asking.
Absolutely, yeah, and I've seen you on stage a couple times talking about 48-Hour Film Project, and I've always thought very highly of the 48-Hour Film Project. I've never done it. I'm actually excited to learn a little bit more right now as we talk to you about it. So first off, for people who have never heard of the 48-Hour Film Project, what is it?
Well, the 48-Hour Film Project, it is where you shoot, edit a film in 48 hours. I'm a visual person, a visual learner, so this is how I sum it up, because if you can take a ride with me. It's like an extreme sport. It's kind of like skydiving. So it's kind of like, you get to the plane, which meaning that you're gearing up for kickoff night. Mm-hmm. And then, you strap in for your assignment, what you got to do. And then when the instructor said, hey, it's time to jump off the plane, there go your 48 hours. So, and when you land, you just survived 48 hours. So if you could just think about that, I mean, it's crazy fun. It's exhilarating. I mean, it's chaotic and fun at the same time. I mean, you got to do it at least once, I will say.
Yeah, it's something that's always been like in the back of my mind. Maybe I'll do this one day. I would love to.
Sure.
I mean, for people like me, like I've been on a film set once or twice, but I've never like worked on a film set. If you are a total newbie and have never done that before, is it still for me or how does that go?
Yes, Andrew, it's for everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've had a family last year that participated.
Oh, cool.
The ages can go from, I think we had maybe a 10-year-old, probably 11-year-old to an 80-year-old. Wow. I mean, it's literally for anyone. I was a competitor myself, so before I became a city producer. So, I mean, I didn't know a whole lot about film sets. I did a little bit, so I was a newbie. There was a lot of newbies on set. If you want to make a film, if you even thought about being a script supervisor, or director, or writer, or anything, I mean, this is it. This is the platform for you to do that on. I mean, like I said, literally anyone can do this.
So that's a question I have, actually. Is the script writing part of the 48 hours as well, or is the script ahead of time?
It's
part of it,
sir.
Too. So you're writing it, making it, everything.
Wow. Right. During kickoff night, you get your three required elements, and that is your character. Your genre, what it's about, your line of dialogue, and your prop. Hmm. So, I mean, you don't know anything until you get there. Hmm. Literally, You don't know.
Build your film around those elements.
Around those three required elements. Yes.
Interesting. Yes. Wow. Well, when is it coming up and how do we get involved?
It is kickoff. As I mentioned before, it's going to be August 25th through to 27th. It's going to be at the Public Theater from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. You get your required elements between that hour, 7 o'clock, you go. Right now, we have a few meet and greets that is going on. We got one July the 22nd at the Public Theater as well. It's a game night, networking type mixer. And then I'll have another Zoom meet and greet in August the 19th. I don't have a time exact to be determined, but you can get involved by going to the website, www.48hourfilm.com. You can also email me if you have any questions at littlerock@48hour.com. Also, there's the Facebook and Instagram, Little Rock Film, 48 Hour Film Project. So those are the,
Yeah, online presence there. I'll link to all of that in the show notes so we can get to it really easily. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm not sure if I'm busy that weekend. I'm going to try and do it this year, maybe. But yeah, is there anything else we need to know about the 48 Hour Film Project?
Oh, yes. Yes. I just announced recently my judges for this year. I'm very excited. So I say drum roll, please. We have the talented Miss Ashley Atkinson.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Yes. You interviewed her.
I did just recently. Yes.
Yeah. She's going to be a judge. And she's known for, as we know, Black Klansman, 30 Rock, Boardwalk Empire, like, and the list goes on. Mm-hmm. And we have Barry Clifton, the talented.
Oh, great.
Yes. He did Yellowstone. He did God Is Not Dead. He also did Mind Cage, you know, et cetera. And then we have Michael Day. He is a fantastic filmmaker who's done countless films. I believe he's on the second season of The Sextons. And he was also AT&T Dream Black recipient.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Very, very talented group of judges. I'm very excited about that.
That is great. Yeah, some great names there. Well, I'm so excited. I hope everyone will check out the website and check out the social media. Yeah. Thank you so much, Celeste, for joining, and I hope people will join the film project this year.
Yes, yes, please. Anybody, just come on. I mean, it's for all ages. So come out.
Great way to spend a weekend, I think.
Yeah. I'm telling you, you survive a 48 hour, I'm telling you, you can do anything. I promise.
Right. That's cool. Well, thank you so much, Celeste. Wish you all the best, and you're welcome back on the podcast anytime.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Andrew. This was fun. Thank you.
Great. Huge thanks to Celeste for coming to tell us about the film project. I hope some of you listening will think about doing it this year. Everyone I've talked to who has done it before has said it is a very memorable experience. Find links in the show notes for more information. And now let's turn to today's film discussion. Wes Anderson is a big name in the film world, and it always feels like a bit of an event when he has a new film. His latest is Asteroid City, and like most of his movies, it has a lot going on and a lot of characters. Maybe more than usual. We talk about that in just a moment. But generally speaking, the film is about the making of a stage play. And for the bulk of the film, we watch that stage play unfold, but in a very cinematic fashion. The fictional Asteroid City is a very small community in the middle of the desert, famous because an asteroid once landed there, leaving an enormous crater. Every year, stargazers and space enthusiasts gather to celebrate the history of the asteroid, and that's how we come to have so many people involved in this story. The lead in the play within the film is Augie Steenbeck, played by Jason Schwartzman. The film also stars Scarlett Johansson, Tom Hanks, Jeffrey Wright, Bryan Cranston, Edward Norton, Jake Ryan, Maya Hawke, Rupert Friend, Liev Schreiber, Sophia Lillis, Matt Dillon, Steve Carell, Tilda Swinton, Bob Balaban, Tony Revolori, Adrian Brody, Hong Chow, Jeff Goldblum, Willem Dafoe, and Margot Robbie, among others. It's truly an enormous cast. Joining me today is Christopher Pistol. You may have heard him on the show before discussing films like After Yang or Everything Everywhere All at Once as part of his South by Southwest reaction episode. Chris is the filmmaker behind a wonderful short called May, and he is also the creator of A Journey Through Cinema History, which is an ongoing film project that you can watch on his YouTube channel. You can find that linked in the show notes of this episode, and I highly encourage you to check it out. All right, without further ado, here is my conversation with Christopher Pistol about Asteroid City.
You're not here.
We're not there. The car exploded. Come get the girls. I have to stay here with Woodrow.
I'm not the chauffeur. I'm the grandfather.
Where are you?
Asteroid City, Farm Route 6, mile 75.
Last train. Junior stargazers and space cadets. Each year, we celebrate Asteroid Day, commemorating September 23rd, 3007 BC, when the Arid Plains meteorite made Earth impact.
Holy Toledo, that's Mitch Campbell.
You were very good in the one about the tramp in the brothel who gets amnesia and becomes a pediatrician. You were very awesome.
Actually, maybe my favorite character I've ever seen.
I don't know why nobody else liked it.
Oh. Christopher Pistol, welcome back to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Andrew. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a while. I feel like I've seen you in person a few times, but I haven't had you on the podcast.
We went to movies together.
We did, yeah. One of my guests that's local, and we're friends in real life.
Yeah.
What did we see? We went and saw Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is that right? Yeah, that was fun.
We did, yeah.
That was a little, and then something else, too.
Yeah.
What else did we watch?
I don't remember.
I can't remember. There was something new.
I just remember in Nightmare on Elm Street, we were like one of like four people in the theater, which is usually what happens.
I'm not even sure why they were
movie plays in Arkansas.
Yeah, no one comes to those, sadly. But that was a fun time. Well, glad to have you back on the show. You were asking me just before we started recording, why me? It's like, well, it's been a while, and I know you've seen this movie, and I'm sure you have some thoughts, and that's good enough for me.
Oh, I have thoughts.
Well, let's get into Asteroid City then. So before we talk about this film, actually,
okay,
I feel like I have a pretty good idea of how you feel about Wes Anderson as a filmmaker. But for the listeners, how big of a fan would you say you are?
I would say I'm a pretty, pretty big fan. Yeah. In fact, I don't think he gets quite as much respect as he probably deserves. I mean, partially because I think he has kind of, you know, a sort of mainstream presence. He's kind of an anomaly of a filmmaker in that he kind of has one foot in mainstream awareness anyway, and then like one foot in the art house world. His films almost have this sort of like crossover appeal.
He was like indie darling for a while, but that doesn't feel right anymore because he's so big.
Well, Royal Tenenbaums was like a big film, like that pretty much like hit like the sort of cultural zeitgeist for a while. But I think his films are accessible enough to where I think he's broken through this sort of art house barrier and somewhat partially because his style is so distinct that he's developed this like large group of detractors as well as fans. In an interview once I had a boss, we were talking about movies and then he said, I'm going to judge you based on this answer, but are you a Wes Anderson fan?
Oh, no.
And I was like, I mean, yeah, I am. And he was like, ugh, he's so pretentious. Okay. And I was like, well, I don't think you know what that word means. Like, I wouldn't really call Wes Anderson pretentious because I think there's a certain self-deprecating nature to his humor that disqualifies him from being pretentious, even though he's, you know, definitely has like a, you know, a more intellectual aesthetic, I guess.
Yeah, I've been copycatted so many times. I mean, recently on social media, it's like you can't get away from all those.
Oh, yeah.
There's a name, blah, blah, blah.
Super intelligent, those things.
put things in the middle of the frame and then put the music on it. That's it.
Really sort of distilling a very complex and interesting style into those basic elements.
Yeah.
But I'm always flummoxed by people who also, when he releases another film, just like they roll their eyes and say, I can't stand this guy's movies. Like, why are you watching them? What do you want?
Yeah, it's interesting. I, as far as my own fandom, I feel like I am also a big fan, and I think it was pretty formative. Like when I was in college, like getting into movies and like starting to understand cinema as an art form. I feel like he was a big name. Like, oh, you gotta check out Wes Anderson movies, and so like I watched.
A good gateway, I think, to like art house cinema as well.
I think so too. Yeah, because he is that sort of that mainstream appeal, and mostly pretty accessible. Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, I think early, like in college, I watched his movies all the time, and then, maybe it was the gateway. So then I like started watching lots of other stuff, and haven't rewatched his old films in quite a while. For the most part, mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. Last one I rewatched, but
yeah, I think his like Criterion Top 10 was one of the first ones that I like heard about and read about, and were like, oh, like what are all these like movies I've never heard of? Like, yeah, who's Max Ophuls, and sort of diving into the deeper like influences. Mm-hmm. But I think like he really stands as his own as like a, you know, one of our, I think, like really valued auteur directors. Mm-hmm. And it definitely like makes me roll my eyes when I hear people sort of like criticize him and say that he should do something different. And like, it makes me wonder if it, like at the height of Ingmar Bergman's career, that people were like, oh, I wish he'd do something completely different. Make an action movie. Ingmar Bergman, challenge yourself.
Like in, you know, 100 years, are people gonna not be able to believe anyone ever had a negative thing to say about Wes Anderson?
I don't know. That'd be interesting.
Well, do you have a favorite Wes Anderson film?
I do. I think I feel like I definitely think what counts me as a fan is I've definitely like rewatched his movies a lot. And then like 2 years ago, I had a grad school class that was a study on Wes Anderson and Paul Thomas Anderson. So I rewatched all of their movies for that class and sort of compared and contrasted the two. I think Grand Budapest Hotel might be for me like his complete and like almost perfected style to date that he's made. I think that one's just like a masterpiece. But I'll always have like a real special place in my heart for Rushmore, which was his like second film. And he made that film, you know, before he turned 30. And for me, it's very much a film like I associate with my youth in both the sort of like coming of age way and a nostalgic sensibility to that one. I think it's also got some of like his best naturalistic performances. And definitely like my favorite soundtrack of all time. I'll re-listen to that soundtrack like while I'm working all the time.
Yeah, that's a great soundtrack. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't think about it till just now, but like Jason Schwartzman is basically the lead of this, which he hasn't been.
Yeah.
The lead since then, probably, which is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the Darjeeling Limited, had kind of a big role, but
one of the three,
kind of sharing it with two other actors. But yeah, this is like the first lead, kind of.
Yeah, I think for a long time I would have said Rushmore, but then also Grand Budapest, I think, was my favorite. But I actually love The French Dispatch so much that's one that I consider my favorite of his movies.
It's really good.
It's so new for me. Yeah,
it's so new for me that I haven't. I don't think it's like completely even settled for me on that one. But I did really love it, and I will go back to that one like probably more than some of the other ones.
I think it hit me just right because it was, I mean, literary world, English major. Mm-hmm. Like I love that stuff, and I also just love an anthology film, and so it hit a lot of buttons for me, and I felt like was Wes Anderson at the height of his powers, and I was just like, this is so good. Yeah, and I really, really love it.
I have a feeling we might be looking back at The French Dispatch as like the beginning of like a new era, because I feel like French Dispatch and Asteroid City have like a very sort of like common thread, a very like common literary thread.
I can't wait to hear more about that. Yeah, what your thoughts on that? Because I have a little, maybe something that's a different, maybe a different angle to look at his films, that I feel like this one feels like some of his older ones in a way. Anyway, we'll get into that. Well, how do you feel generally about Asteroid City? Would you say this is like top tier Wes Anderson, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, so I've seen Asteroid City twice now. I went and saw it again the other day. My wife couldn't go the first time, so I took her to see it for a second time. And I think in this stage of Wes Anderson's career, his films feel, I think he's getting a little bit more dense with his material. And there was a lot that I felt I needed to unpack the first time. I definitely was like, I had more of a complex feeling coming out of it. Like I wasn't really sure what to feel about it, or wasn't sure how exactly to that I felt about it. And I didn't have that reaction like when I saw Grand Budapest Hotel or even The French Dispatch. Mm-hmm. Coming out of those, I was like immediately like pretty floored by them. But one thing I did love about it was that talking about Anderson's filmography is that everyone kind of has, you know, pretty differing opinions about which ones are better and which ones affected them the most. And for, I think that's, that has a lot to do with sort of his, like, the emotional resonance of his material. I think some just hit differently than others. Like, I know people who you think, like, Darjeeling Limited is their favorite because of the, you know, one reason or another. For me, I think the emotional through line for Asteroid City didn't, like, 100% land with me. And that's kind of like a core element for me, like, is his sort of, I guess, like, point or emotional through line going to stick? I didn't really feel like it stuck with me. It kind of, you know, it culminates in this scene, which I don't know, I don't want to give too much away, but it definitely culminates in this scene towards the end with Jason Schwartzman and Margot Robbie. And, you know, the first time I saw the movie, I don't think I even really understood what that scene meant at all. I think the second time I was able to unpack it a little bit more. I think I was just kind of sideswiped by the change of pace and the setting. And I still don't fully understand. There's a scene towards the end with all the actors sort of like chanting something together. And I don't even, I want to get your thoughts on that. Cause I don't have, even, I have I'm maybe not a even theory, sure how I feel,
like,
about it.
I've never really thought about, like, what does that mean? Yeah.
I've never felt more like, I feel like confusion from the audience surrounding me than I did, I think, during that moment.
It takes a hard left turn right there. It's kind of a weird moment.
Yeah. I think it also, for me, it lacks a little bit of a narrative momentum in the story that I usually love in his movies. I think Grand Budapest Hotel has a great sort of like thrust to the narrative. And this is more like a hangout movie. This is almost kind of like a, it's a very much like, I mean, it's essentially a play. It's a film where characters get together in one location and they kind of are stuck there and stay there. And it's just about how they interact. It kind of also reminded me of, have you seen the movie True Stories? The Talking Heads film?
No, but I know of it.
Oh man, you should definitely check it out if you liked this. That's a great little quirky movie about a small town in Texas. I think also this movie really kind of like made me reflect on where Anderson is as a filmmaker as far as his age goes, because this definitely feels like a filmmaker who's exploring themes of middle age. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that too, but I felt like that was kind of the headspace of it. So it's a very dense answer to your question.
No, that's okay. Like, no, I'm gonna pick some pieces of that and run with them. But yeah, I agree. Like, thinking about, like, Rushmore feels like a movie that a young man made, you know, and this doesn't feel that way at all. And like, it feels like he couldn't go back and make Rushmore now, you know, then it'd be the same film. But yeah, absolutely. I agree. So like, I think I'm in the same place as you, where, like, having seen it once, I need to see it again to understand that ending a bit more, the Margot Robbie scene. But I do love, like, just before the Margot Robbie scene, when, again, I don't want to spoil exactly what happens, but there's a little bit of a shift.
There's a
within the construct. Within the construct, the conversation he has with Adrian Brody. That was my kind of favorite moment of the movie, because I think it kind of gets at the core theme. But I agree, like, at least on first watch, this isn't like, oh man, this is my new favorite Wes Anderson. It didn't hit me in the same way. Emotionally, like you're talking about, I agree that it feels a bit more meandering narratively, and exactly what you're saying about Grand Budapest really has this narrative drive, and so does Fringe Dispatch. I think it has a nice, like, the pacing of the movie just really quick and like fun, but also slows down for those emotional moments. And I think that's, for me, that's the marriage of, like, thinking about his older films as mostly a little bit more slower paced. And so what I wrote in my Fringe Dispatch review was, like, I think there's a certain, like, some of his earlier films, I wouldn't use the word warmth to some of the performances, like, but then I would for some of his later ones, thinking about like, okay, like, camera pausing on someone, they say a line really slowly, you know, like, back and forth. And I think people who don't connect with that, like, oh, it's too robotic, it's not, it doesn't feel real or whatever. Which it's not like I have a complaint about that, but that is, I feel like, something that has changed a bit over the years. Think about Grand Budapest as a, definitely there is some real warmth to those characters. And then I felt the same in Fringe Dispatch as well. And this, to kind of what I was saying earlier, it feels like it's almost going back to some of those, like, thinking about, like, the Royal Tenenbaums or,
more mannered,
Darjeeling. Yeah, more mannered, more like, that's a good word, mannered, and sort of like thinking about like Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson, their relationship in this, like, I like, you feel their connection, but it's not like a big sweeping romantic, you know, warm right. relationship, you know,
right.
It feels not clinical is not the right word, but it's, you know, it doesn't have just a
standoffish a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe that. Maybe. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. So anyway, this, not that it felt like a step back in his style or anything like that, but cause I know it's intentional, like, but it did feel like this reminded me of his older movies in that mm-hmm. way. Which is not, again, not necessarily saying that's good or bad, but I definitely connect more with French Dispatch or Grand Budapest. But yeah, so like this wasn't an immediately one that I thought, oh, wow, like, this is my favorite movie of the year or anything like that. But I did really like it. And I had a lot of moments that I really connected with. And yeah. I think thinking about it, as you just said, as a hangout movie will really help me on a second watch to probably just connect with it a bit more because, I did really like it. But yeah.
I think taking it in is sort of almost like a play as well, because you are watching a sort of like movie within a play, or perhaps a play within a movie.
Yeah. All those layers. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of multiple layers. So thinking of it, I think on that level, and the fact that the characters are all playing characters, but they're playing characters who are also these other characters underneath.
Yeah.
So they're basically like having to play their characters as performed by the actors that they're also portraying. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's multiple levels of it to kind of to dig through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's another thing to key into more on a second watch to really appreciate, because yeah, it's not just Jason Schwartzman playing the character in the play. It's whatever his actor mm-hmm. name is. I can't remember. Yeah. And it that is a very Andersonian feeling touch, because I think forever he's had this, like he's not going for realism exactly in his style, right? He wants.
Oh, no.
I think Rushmore opens with the curtain opening.
The curtains,
like,
yeah.
Like we're watching a constructed thing. Like that's the point, and that's what he wants us to be aware of that. And I think I can't remember exactly how the Grand Budapest opens, but there's like a few layers of the story. Like we're within a book,
yeah,
something like that. Mm-hmm. And so here we're actually, it's a television broadcast about the history of the play. And then we're seeing the play within that as well. And so mm-hmm. then we jump back and forth between those layers, and playing with that, I think is really fun. And gets to that scene that I love with Adrian Brody at the end.
Yeah, I know a lot of people say that some of his like earlier films have a lot more spontaneity because he wasn't able mm-hmm. to control every like mm-hmm. element of, he's doing a lot more sort of like on location shooting and not controlling completely every element of production. And obviously he likes to control every element of the production design and production. So this, he literally like built a city out in the desert in Spain. So everything is exactly to his, you know, particular how he likes it, and down to like the background mountains, which obviously, you know, look like, or intentionally look like, you know, paintings.
They're on the stage within the film. Yeah. Yeah. And it's also like thinking about the control with his stop motion films, Fantastic Mr. Fox and Isle of Dogs, mm-hmm. which I would say Isle of Dogs is another top tier. I really, really love Isle of Dogs, but this kind of marries the two really well, because I mean, it's such a constructed thing, even though we're working with real actors, but then there's also like the stop motion Roadrunner that's running around. Mm-hmm. And, I saw a few back behind the scenes images of like a guy in a green suit, like
controlling a little puppet.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So he brings some puppetry in here, and again, like having such a constructed world, mm-hmm. Makes it.
That's really funny. Like, you like mentioned Isle of Dogs, because I think I wrote down that I'd probably put this like the ones that it feels similar to me are Isle of Dogs and Life Aquatic, which I think I would put like lower on the on my list though. So that's maybe why I struggled with this one a little bit more. Like it feels like there was a sort of like an emotional break that needed to happen that I didn't think quite happened. Like mm-hmm. there's, you know, a big sort of like brawl breakout fight at the end, like sort of chaos, but I don't know. It almost seemed like we needed to have something a little bit more dramatic.
Yeah, it's funny too, because in the first segment of The French Dispatch, the one with Benicio del Toro, mm-hmm. there's a big fight at the end of that, and that one felt a lot more visceral, and like I cared more about it, you know.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. So yeah, maybe this film is more of an intellectual exercise more than emotional, because that's the experience too. Like my favorite moment, which I'm gonna reference a couple of times, that Adrian Brody conversation, isn't one where I was just like, oh, now I'm crying. It's more just like, mm-hmm. oh, that's really thought provoking. And like, I really like that this is where the film went.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, which I don't think Wes Anderson is like, I don't think that's, he does that all the time. Because some of his movies do make me cry.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm.
Despite what some people will say about him being like emotionally distant. I totally disagree with that. I think some of his movies are extremely emotionally relevant. But yeah, this one definitely felt more like a sort of a cathartic, like, yes, than a, ooh, I really felt that one. And some people, I've seen like, mostly people are really liking this one. And mostly I've seen a lot of like strong reactions to this one saying it's like their favorite Wes Anderson movie in years.
I've seen a few people say that too.
It's really having an emotional impact on them. So I think it's definitely Wes Anderson, his like filmography to me almost seems like a Rorschach test of like, you know, what kind of hits you harder, this or this, and sort of like, where do you find it?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've seen a couple of people like ranking and putting this really high, and I want to look back and see like if this is in some way harkening back to some of his older films. If you his new stuff isn't as good, but then this feels like his old stuff, you know, maybe people are connecting with it on that level.
Yeah.
Would you have any favorite moments you wanted to highlight from the film?
I think Jason Schwartzman and Scarlett Johansson, I think their chemistry is my favorite aspect of the film. Yeah. Like I said, this film feels more I think it feels more like palpable to a like a middle-aged sort of crisis. Mm. I mean, the whole film is sort of about this crisis of existence or meaning in the universe kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's, I think that he tries to like cover it from every demographic because we have kids, these sort of like intellectual, you know, brainiac kids, and then we have like the Tom Hanks is the grandfather, and then we have some characters sort of in between. But I think that the, you know, the Jason Schwartzman and the Scarlett Johansson characters, I think, have the best sort of chemistry, and I think they handle the I like their storyline probably the best. So all the scenes with them, like, they pretty much always communicate via a window. Like, they're always in separate cabins talking to each other through the windows. Another sort of great metaphor for their relationship of keeping them sort of separate, but together. And like all those scenes I love, like, I thought those were some of the best scenes in the movie.
I agree.
But I think it's also hard because you have so many characters in this movie. So a lot of times when it would cut to the other characters, they might only have like two scenes.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard to, I think, connect as much to that side of the movie.
I'll agree. That is another kind of complaint. Maybe is not the right word, but just another thing that I didn't, he's had large casts before, but this one is so large that like some of these characters
barely has large casts.
But this one is really big. And so like Liev Schreiber, I feel like I don't remember much about his character after one.
No.
And like some of those other people that are like, oh, this would probably be interesting to explore a little bit more. I don't know. But yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, I love a few of my favorite moments. Again, I've referenced that conversation a bunch of times, but then it's what you're saying, like, is there a meaning? It's kind of like the biggest theme in the way that comes in. Maybe there is a meaning, and getting at the meaning of life through art, I think, is a really cool kind of bent to look at that, because like he's struggling to understand how to play his part, right? Jason Schwartzman's character,
right?
The actor level character, not the character within the character, all of that,
kind of both though.
I think both, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think that's a cool way to do that. I love the first ceremony, which I won't spoil again what happens there, like within the crater, the surprising thing that happens, where we also get a little stop motion moment, which was fun. Another thing I won't spoil, but Jeff Goldblum's cameo is really funny, like the part that he ends up playing. But then, that scene with Margot Robbie, even though I don't feel like I fully understand it within the context of the movie, it feels really special. And I like the connection that they form there. They're sort of on the margins of what they're each doing and looking through a window at each other in a way, kind of like Scarlett Johansson character.
So that hit me the second time I watched it. It's like, they are like having a conversation. Now,
so.
They're having a conversation on two balconies separated from each other, exactly like every conversation he's pretty much had with Scarlett Johansson throughout this movie.
Yeah, wow. It's also like sometimes I watch a movie then have a podcast where like, oh, I now understand it better. And then I can watch it again and really understand. So if you really want to understand this movie, make a podcast about it.
And then maybe, watch it again. I'll have to go back and take that class that I took at grad school again and try and add these couple movies, the last two movies he's made to that curriculum and see where it lands.
Yes.
It was funny because that class was really split on people that liked either Wes Anderson or Paul Thomas Anderson better. And it was almost like it was like an antagonistic relationship.
Fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some other just actors I really like in this performance is the guy who plays, I can't remember his name, the son, Jason Schwartzman's son.
Yes.
I don't know his character's name right now. I'm going to look it up really quickly, but I thought he did a great job in this movie and like his character is really interesting.
I could tell that Wes Anderson liked him all the way back. He was in Moonrise Kingdom. He played like one of the little brothers. Somewhere.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. And Wes Anderson put him on the Criterion commentary track to like moderate it.
Really?
So Wes Anderson and the kid, he was much younger than he was probably like around 10 or 9 or so. He asked him like call up Bruce Willis or Edward Norton and stuff during the commentary. That's funny. It's really funny.
Woodrow is the character name and the actor is Jake Ryan.
Okay.
Which he has a very particular kind of look to him and like believable as Jason Schwartzman's son, which is funny. And then just the awkward teenager kind of some of the things I love about Moonrise Kingdom, like just the awkwardness of adolescence, like he brings that energy a little bit to this. And just all the prodigy children are good. Sophia Lillis, I really like she's from It Chapter 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is interesting in this. I think it's his first time in a Wes Anderson movie. And it's like, sometimes bringing an actor you're so familiar with into this like very particular kind of style of filmmaking is a little jarring, but I thought I really liked him in this.
I thought he could have been utilized a little bit better. I mean, I don't know, that part almost felt like I almost felt like I was paying more attention to it than I was supposed to, because I have a sneaking suspicion that Bill Murray was just unavailable.
I had that thought, like, this feels like a Bill Murray role, although I thought that Bill Murray's role was the one Steve Carell ended up having, because Bill Murray had COVID when they made this and they actually couldn't do it. So I'm pretty sure that was Steve Carell's role, which is interesting because his role, I also felt like, is very forgettable. I think in Bill Murray's hands, that could have been a really funny little character. But I did feel like, I don't know, it's kind of the same thing with Tom Hanks. It's like I'm paying attention to the fact that this is Steve Carell and how does he fit into the Wes Anderson style of filmmaking and acting? And it's, I just felt like maybe more could have been done there. And it feels like, I thought about it as, because he keeps saying like, yes, absolutely, I understand, as people are complaining and stuff. Which I think could have been really funny from Bill Murray, but
I don't have a problem with Wes Anderson like having such a large cast, but usually what he does with it is that it usually sort of like all of the sort of like secondary characters are sort of there to support the like focus of the main characters. Everyone, all the side characters in Grand Budapest Hotel, they're all, you know, circling around Ralph Fiennes' character, and sort of everything that he does like affects them. And this felt a little bit more like, you know, we have our main characters and then we have some of these characters we'll go over for just a little bit and come back. But I remember watching his filmography, like straight through, when we hit Darjeeling Limited, that felt like a big change because all of a sudden all the side characters go away and we're kind of just left with three.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't ever watch them through in order like that. I think I've just jumped around. That would be a good exercise to do one day. Well, any other thoughts about Asteroid City? Final word on the film?
I don't know. I feel like it's hard to almost like recommend Wes Anderson films to people who either haven't, you know, I feel like at this point people are either going to like head out to see it as soon as they can, or they're just like, no, I'm not interested. And I don't think you can sway the people who aren't interested at this point. Cause it's not like you're saying like, oh, this is like no other Wes Anderson film before. I mean, I think you pretty much know what you're getting into.
Yeah. I think maybe with like the Grand Budapest, you can be like, okay, if you don't love Wes Anderson, still watch this. It's really funny. You might connect.
Oh, yeah, for
maybe
sure.
Not so much with this movie, you know? So, yeah, yeah. I think that's a Wes Anderson movie. If you know what you're in for with that, you're going to like it or not, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really safe bet. I'm really looking forward to his next movie, which is apparently a short film. Oh, that's going to be on Netflix. It's called Henry Sugar. It's
was it a Roald Dahl thing?
I think it is. Yeah. It's a Roald Dahl connection.
Oh yeah.
But it has Richard Ayoade in it, who's one of my favorite directors/actors. And this like Wes Anderson pairing feels like a match made in heaven.
Absolutely. I didn't know all that. I knew that Netflix had like purchased all the Roald Dahl rights. And I think I heard Wes Anderson was going to do something. That's really cool. That's
I thought it was going to be his next feature. And I was a little disappointed to hear it was just a short, but I'm still looking forward to it.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Well, Asteroid City, still playing in theaters. Recommended by both of us, I think, even if, you know, neither of our favorite Wes Anderson or whatever. But
I think it's a soft recommendation, but still a recommendation.
Yeah. I do really like it. I do want to see it again, hopefully while it's still in the theater. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show again, Chris. Always love hearing your thoughts and appreciate your time.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Huge thanks to Chris. I always really appreciate it when he comes on the show. And stay tuned. The plan for next time is to continue the Aronofsky series with a look at Black Swan and Requiem for a Dream. And after that, the plans are still being formed, but we will likely have an episode on Oppenheimer and planning to discuss the new horror film Talk to Me in a few weeks. I also have a few more episodes coming out of the Bentonville Film Festival in the works, so those will be dropping as bonus episodes in the next few weeks. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We have a few years worth of episodes now. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. And you can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, keep it snob free.